Thanks. Any questions or comments for Olivia? Let me add a thought. Olivia and I were talking earlier this morning. For some of you, you may be less familiar with the Campus and Community Together for Good initiative that started back in 2009-10 between the Hancock Public Schools and Vinland University. What we call the Hancock Award is a tuition remission opportunity for graduates of Hancock High School. We are finalizing an extension of that 12-year program for another 7 years. There are some modifications, there are some improvements. One of the things that will happen is it's going to be the district wants to take this and blow it up a bit. Going to rebrand it. They're going to move to different nomenclature, so it'll be called the Hancock Promise, and then they're going to build a marketing PR campaign around this extension. It's a win-win, certainly for the district in terms of attracting families and students, and it's always a win for us while we continue to fill seats that otherwise would be empty. It's a different model if that were not the case, but this model works for us. As in other words, we get enough, we generate revenue for ourselves at a level that still benefits us as long as we are not having to add costs. And so it's a really wonderful opportunity. You'll hear more about that. I bring it up here because Olivia and I were chatting earlier, and Olivia's will work with Steve Patchen, who is the superintendent of Hancock Schools, as we imagine how best to market this extension for, especially in the Cocker Country. Any questions or comments about that? Well, thank you, Olivia. I appreciate that very much. Gary, you're with us. Updates from top of mind stuff for you this week?
Well, just a reminder to all the coaches and enrollment officers that, you know, this is a key home stretch run for us. Financial aid offices ready and waiting for your feedback to know what students we need to work with so that we can sell the remaining seats. So make sure you're communicating with them. If you have people on the fence, if you have students who think we can get over that line, and you're just not sure whether we have the budget for it, financial aid and Sandy are completely in tune with what's available, please be talking to them constantly. And when I say constantly, I'm sure Sandy will probably hit me for that. Don't really be talking to her constantly, but please reach out. This is a critical time, as Anthony pointed out. We need another 100 students. We need to close that gap. Other than that, I think the rest of the business office, at least the finance department, is kind of inwardly focused at the moment. We are in a time of, you know, it's our audit. It's a 401k audit or audits. It is insurance renewal time. So we're just knee-deep in schedules and spreadsheets and stupid things. So bother Sandy, don't bother us.
Thanks, Gary.
Sure.
Any questions or comments for Gary? I don't know that Curtis is with us today. And I believe that Aaron is also away. Am I, correct me if I'm wrong.
I believe you're right on that, Philip.
Okay.
Because Aaron's gone, if I could just kind of chime in with one piece of Aaron's that we've been reviewing on a weekly basis too, and that's the retention rate. And right now we are, I believe she said, 12 to 14 students shy of hitting our retention number. But she has that same number in green on our list, which means they're intending to return. They just haven't registered. They're eligible, they're good, everything, but we need to move them from sitting around not registered to registered. And then there are some that they're not sure about that very easily could convert to registered. So she is extremely confident that our retention goal will be hit. So that's a good thing. And I want to thank everybody who has worked hard with our students in light of COVID in keeping them engaged and committed to returning in the fall. That's been good. So thank everybody.
Appreciate that, Freddie. Thank you. Jason Sullivan. Jason, are you available for just sharing with us any updates this week from your office?
So, there's not too much right now. The semester is going to end at the end of this week for summer. So those of you that are faculty teaching in the summer, just remember that grades are due on Tuesday at 3:00 in Empower. For the rest of you, faculty, or those of you in academic support, pending grades all being in on Tuesday at 3, Freddie and I will review them on Wednesday. So probably around Thursday, the academic standing reports for the summer semester will be out. So from there, we'll be emailing the advisors if anybody, for example, went to probation or to warning or suspension, anything like that where maybe you have to review a schedule to see if something needs to change before the student gets your call. Other than that, that's probably the top thing at the moment, like immediate for summer. And then just as admissions is doing files, I'll be getting files early next week. I think there's going to be, as of today, around 12 files to be picked up. And we have some that are still processing right now. So with admissions, it's kind of a steady little stream at the moment of files. And then, Freddie said, if there's any questions on scheduling a returner, let us know. For deans and academic support, Veronica, for example, if an advisor is not available and a student wants to schedule, and if you need access to that student's information, let us know. Darren or I can give you guys access to that file so you can go through Empower and help them schedule. Yeah, that should be everything.
All right, thanks, Jason. Questions or comments for Jason? All right, thanks. April, we'd love to hear anything top of mind this week from Northwind Books.
Top of mind? I'm not sure. It's hot. It's really hot. So I don't think there's a whole heck of a lot of people that feel like going out and about. So traffic has decreased because of that. But, you know, there's still a lot of visitors from out of town. We haven't so much seen an influx in community members out and about, I don't know if everyone's just still hanging out at their houses, but our business hasn't seen it. So we're thankful for the visitors to the area that do come in. We haven't had any problems with people being masked because I think they're familiar with it because they are coming from outside the area. But other than that, I guess the heat streak can keep up because it's kind of a nice reminder that we put up with winter for a reason.
I'm with you on that. Thanks. Any questions or for April and updates from Northwind Books? Thanks, April. Well, let's. I know that I'm neglecting. So somebody from my team or just other colleagues in the room, let's make sure that everybody has an opportunity to bring to the conversation things that are on your mind. We have about 15 minutes left. So what's top of mind for others today, and what would be helpful to have some conversation about?
So if I could ask a question.
Yeah.
In the course of the rundowns here today, it's been mentioned that all of the students coming onto campus will be tested when they come onto campus. What protocols do we have for student athletes when they return to campus? Are they going to be tested upon returning to campus for athletic competition, so on and so forth?
Yes. So I don't have a full answer for you, Rich, at this point, but I can say this. On Tuesday, we reviewed safety protocols for in-season sports. And so certainly the testing upon return was covered, and we were discussing that. So we don't know exactly yet how, Rich, we can accommodate that, because we're trying to adjust to testing capacities. And Freddie keeps us, along with Mark Mirren, they keep us somewhat informed about the changing capacity that we're seeing. But I can also honestly say, Rich, that in those scenarios that we're building, and is that the fall athletics piece is one that is consuming our thinking right now. I know that Curtis has had some conversations with some of his staff. Curtis and I are speaking about this almost every other day. So I think everybody in the room can appreciate once athletics, and this is what I asked for last Tuesday from Curtis. I simply said, Curtis, give us athletics protocols for programs in competitive seasons. And so when we look at that, Rich, and we look at the protocols that would be required, the question that I'm asking and that the team is asking is, do those protocols meet minimal thresholds of safety and protection that we are committing ourselves to? And that question for the whole community, not just those who are traveling to competitions, but for all our entire learning community and beyond the borders of campus. And that's going to be hard to meet, Rich. So we are very carefully considering all scenarios. You will see that announcements are beginning to come to our attention related to suspension of fall sports. I have asked for that be part. You know, we have to build all those scenarios, and I'm certainly that's certainly one scenario that that I'm asking for us to be able to review and consider. But so the details of those protocols, such as your question, which I think is part of a much larger question for us, is how do we keep our students, faculty and staff, community, our municipality, how do we do that when we have this kind of travel and exposure that is continuous through the fall? I don't know that helps as much as you are hoping, but know that we're deep into that right now, as are all the other campuses right now across the country.
Well, and the reason I asked, Philip, is that the Ivy League Conference has canceled all fall sports. There have been some other things about it being cost prohibitive for athletics to test after every travel off campus, and so they've canceled. And we're dealing with a probability of a 20% shortfall in enrollment and budget, and this is an additional expense. And so it was just one of those things that's been, you know, rattling around in my melon.
Yeah. Well, it's rattling around in ours too, and well, it's more than rattling, Rich. So, you know, your concerns are well expressed, and I think everyone in the room can appreciate that. Without Curtis in the room, I don't want to extend beyond what is helpful at this point. But we are watching very closely all the announcements and we do have D3 campuses that are canceling fall sports. What tends to happen is that the move in collegiate athletics goes from the coast to the Midwest. So normally those moves start with East and West Coast, and they make their way toward the center. And so we want especially to be mindful of D3 campuses that are announcing similar moves and learn from them. We certainly are, we're mindful of the complexities that I think all campuses are, it's just becoming increasingly, that they're becoming increasingly aware of. So thank you for that. Are there others that would want to add thoughts to Rich's question?
Yeah, I'd like to add to that, and I'm not going to speak for our athletic program, but I think it's important to know that in the basketball coaches world, we've shifted from a wait and see what's coming out to being more proactive. Most of my friends in coaching have the same concerns that you shared, Dr. G, about you know the travel that we're doing. I can tell you that I've spoken to 6 coaches of teams that were scheduled to play about what are you guys doing when we come down? What are you expecting when we come up? And so I think just as far as basketball coaches go, we're seeing it in football too. We're asking those same questions. We have the same concerns. And so we're together in that ideology of with the travel and all these other things. And so I just, want to share that we're not just focused on playing the season, regardless of what's out there. We want to make sure that we're proactive in finding solutions. I can tell you that I've traveled to a few events recently, basketball tournaments, youth tournaments, junior college tournaments, and I've seen what's in place. I'll be going to coach in a pro summer league here in a few weeks. And there's a laundry list of things that are in place. And then, I'm communicating back with these tournaments. How do things go? What's the feedback been from parents and participants? Did you see a rise? Did people, contract the virus? And so we're very involved in finding solutions and have the same interests, I think, as professors and staff do at these schools across the country.
Thanks, John.
One of the, there's much more that could be said here, Rich, about your question, and I think what we're going to do is I can tell you now that this particular question that concerns all of us will be part of our conversation over the coming weeks. So anticipate more, and these are the kinds of things that we need to be bringing to the room when we're together on Thursdays. We're not always going to be able to say everything that we hope could be said, but at least we're able to express ourselves with one another and hear what others are thinking and what leadership can provide at any given point. So appreciate that. Other things top of mind that people would like to ask, Michael?
No, I've got a question. Do we have any ideas yet what we're going to do academically if a student or a professor get the virus? Because it seems like that's, if a professor gets the virus, potentially their course stops. So what kind of ideas have people had about what the policies are? If a student gets the virus and is out for 6 weeks, do they get a pass? Do they get a grade? Do they have to catch up? But I think more importantly, what happens if a professor gets the virus academically?
Thank you.
And those are conversations that have been happening amongst the CAOs at all the institutions.
Yeah.
Part of our conversation yesterday, especially with the course sharing, because that was one of the concerns we had. If, say, you're teaching an intro to social, easy course, right, as far as an example is concerned. Got a lot of students. We don't necessarily have a backup on campus that can step in for half a semester if that was the case. would we be able to transition those students into one of the virtual courses from another institution? That's the same course that we would have accepted if they were transferring it in from some other institution. Could we pivot that way? So right now, we don't know if that can work, but we threw it on the table. Is that a good backup plan to have in case we had a need such as that? How would that then work? Okay? Because these are courses, these introductory courses that are, have larger enrollments, whereby a smaller enrollment course might be very easy to assume or assimilate into another structure. So, yes, we're seeing how can we help each other when we have smaller institutions such as ours that have the history department of one, a social department of one. You know, and that's really hard. You really can't count on too many colleagues to pitch hit for you for a long period of time. If it was only a couple of days, yeah, we can substitute for each other. We can step in. But for the long haul or an extended period of time, we need to have those in place. So we are aware that it's a concern, and these are the things that we need to have locked down. I think it's another plug for faculty to ensure to have everything in the online world ready to pull triggers or levers at any point in time for any reason. Okay, because you might be exposed and you have to be home for 14 days. And so, again, the course still needs to go on. You're not necessarily sick, but you have to be quarantined. You could do those 2 weeks online. So there are all sorts of things that can, there's a really strong role for online companions right now.
So, that stuff's interesting, but that also means if we joined a pool like that, I would be teaching intro soc, and halfway through the semester, I might suddenly get twice as many students.
That is true.
Who I would have to teach entirely online.
If your course were listed as part of the pool. So right now we're looking at being a host institution, which means our students could join other classes, but that doesn't necessarily mean that unless we become a teaching institution, our courses will not be accepting students. Because okay. I don't know if we're ready to be a teaching institution yet. This is just a conversation I had yesterday afternoon, so it's still fresh. But we're looking at being a host where our students could potentially take advantage. Be nice to be teaching, but like I said, I'm not quite sure where we are as far as being able to do that. At least across all the disciplines.
If I could dovetail onto that, if one of the faculty or someone gets sick as a consequence of being on campus, is that going to go through workman's comp, or is that going to go through how are we handling that visa insurance and OSHA?
Karen.
Yeah, that's something we're looking into, Rich.
Have you heard how other institutions are handling it, Rich?
No, it's just if one of them gets, the only place I'm going right now is to the damn grocery store. I go at 7 o'clock in the morning with my mask on. I come home, take a shower, that's it. And, so majority of the, any kind of place that I might be exposed is school when fall comes back. And so I'm just wondering, how is that all going to be handled in regards to our insurance, whether it's going to be workman's comp related? Is it going to be a combination of the two? Just a question. Because I can deal with the insurance company myself. I don't know if I need an advocate or a liaison if it's going through workman's comp. That, you know what I'm saying? What is the protocol if it does go through workman's comp? Do I need a liaison from HR?
Right. And I don't personally and professionally, I don't think we want it to go through the workers' comp route. You know, I don't think they're prepared to handle this. We do, if we have Finlandia's Mesa insurance that is strong insurance, whether we can prove the exposure was on campus or, you know, that's something too that legally, you know, that has to have happened at work for workers' comp to kick in. Management starts as well. So, Rich, these are great questions.
They really are.
We'll follow, I'll get back. You'll have to do some digging on that one. Thank you. Because that's a national issue.
I'm quite sure that that question has been asked by others, and so we will find what the pool of answers has been to this point.
Yeah, I've not seen it stated in listserv. That's very interesting. Nobody wants to go there, probably.
Well, originally when COVID came out, the mandate was that insurance companies were going to cover all expenses related to COVID.
Right.
So the administration is changing their tune, and I don't know where they are in trying to do any types of executive orders or what have you. But right now, insurance companies are supposed to cover it because you're not going to be able to prove that the exposure was on campus specifically. Their contact tracing isn't that specific at this point in time. So I can see workman's comp fighting it. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the mercy of a lot of factors. But insurance is good.
Well, then, since we do know that, you know, we are definitely probably going to be exposed to this virus at work, you know, with students coming in and out and all this stuff and testing being as it is, I really sincerely hope that we have a very, very strong kind of militant keep your mask on, wash your hands policy. You know, I mean, the fact that I've been on campus and seen people without masks and, you know, I wear my mask when I'm there. It's infuriating. And especially now that we have COVID on our campus and we know that, you know, so I just really hope that there's a very strong message from you guys saying wear a mask, add a bleep word if you need to, because this is very dangerous and it's not fair for us all to be exposed to this.
I think we all are in agreement on that. Mm-hmm. It's closer to home now than it ever has been.
Hillary, I think that it's a very good word. And, yeah, it starts, you know, it starts with me, with our board and my team, and then each one of us. We have to hold each other accountable. So I think even in the language that we have shared in the current plan, we talk about pledging to one another. What is it that, and that's something that we have yet to develop, but we certainly will be talking about is what do we sign on to as a learning community when we commit, to, a safe open? What is that level of commitment? And it certainly begins with all of us in this room. So Hillary, it's, you're absolutely right. This has to be modeled and it has to be reinforced continually. Appreciate your word on that.
Leanne, it reminds me of our It's On Us campaign. Because it is. It's on us.
Yeah.
Something that we all signed a pledge for. We did a video. We wore T-shirts. And I think it's something like that.
One thing Freddie had mentioned is having, when students come on campus, signing a physical pledge about all of the same things that we're talking about right now. So that is one option to look into.
Yeah, that's what another private institution is doing. I can't remember which one I told you
about. I'd like to speak on that. We had students on campus, and we were very militant about the masks. We told them it was a privilege to have them on campus when the governor opened up enough space for us to do small groups. I will, yeah, I'm sorry I'm not going to be flowery about this. It was very frustrating to me to make sure the students wear masks, implore the importance of this, but yet still see members of our community, our Finlandia family, walking around campus without their masks. And yeah. I appreciate the pledge, but what are we going to do? To me, it's come to work, wear a mask. If you're not going to wear a mask, then stay home. I don't know where the question lies here.
It's not the students.
It was us who were walking around without masks when we were supposed to be the most careful.
And on a side note, the video that Olivia put out, may I recommend that we have the person that is talking in the video wearing a mask to reinforce that?
We didn't do that because we were outside, and per our recommendations, per our current protocols, we don't have to wear a mask if you're outside. That did run through my mind. So, I mean, moving forward, if we feel like it's necessary, we can, but that's the reason why we didn't, was because we were outside and we maintained quite a bit of distance between us.
Normalizing it is very important, though. I mean, it is extremely important to normalize it. And the other thing is that even if, like, I mean, I don't have a mask on right now because I've only been in my home all day, but if I were to step outside from my house right now, cause, I mean, people drive up to my driveway sometimes. Like, I wear a mask around my neck whenever I step out. So you could at the very least have one around your neck. You know, I didn't get to see the video, but, you know, I mean, we really, 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 really need to normalize it.
No, absolutely.
And I asked a question about public people, and this is the same with the bookstore. I mean, how do we deal with people from the public who come in without a mask? That's exposing us all, including our students who pay to go here.
Right, absolutely. And one of the things that we're going to be working on is a masking campaign as well, trying to bring in Riku, I know that I've spoken with Leanne about doing social distancing videos, highlighting, you know, keeping your distance away from each other, things like that. So it is going to be a thing that we work on, is making masking normal.
So I'm wondering, is it too superficial and too hollow for us just to practice? When we come to our conversation next week, let's all have masks on, just to start the meeting with a mask. Is it purely symbolic? Is it just hollow? It might feel that way. However, I find room for us to say together in this kind of space, this virtual space, to say, yes, let's all be wearing a mask when we begin next week. I mean, we're not in spaces that we're sharing with others. That might be the case, but and then we can have a conversation. We don't have to conduct the entire meeting with a mask on.
Sam, I think 50% of us who are not, do not have their videos on right now.
Good point, Kevin.
There, Kevin. Hi, Kevin.
Yeah.
I think the symbolism is maybe less important. I think maybe Hillary's question can be reduced to, what do we do when we see colleagues on campus indoors without masks? What do we do this week, between now, when we see those people, what do we do?
We hold them accountable, Michael, and we say, I'm a member of this community. If you don't know that person, I think that you need to be considering how one can hold each other accountable in ways that are constructive. If you know that person well, that might alter how we approach them. But there's just no doubt about it, Michael, that we hold each other accountable. And that means going, you know, directing ourselves to that person and saying, this is our requirement, and this is the expectation. If you don't have a mask, let me tell you where you can find one.
Yeah, I was just going to offer that Nicander, at least in admissions, because we have visitors coming in, does have a box, you know, of the one-time use ones. And so I know that can't be the only place around campus. I think there's probably several places where masks are available for those that might not have them with them. So I'd be more than glad to obviously give someone a mask that doesn't happen to have one, too, for their
know, three particular places, you know, places that people could go. You could go here, here, or here if you are in immediate need of a mask.
I think that's an excellent idea. There should be at least one per building. I would say potentially the top of my head, admissions is a great place, but I think the library, potentially the registrar's office, Jason. Some other key places where we know that there's going to be a lot of potential walk-in traffic. We should have a box of disposable masks available.
The bookstore and the Heritage Center.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I put my mask on because I'm getting ready to leave here and go to a public event. So it wasn't for anything other than that. But I know we're almost done here, but one of the concerns that I'm starting to feel a little bit is that, you know, we're going to do everything we possibly can, whether it's in athletics or in the classroom and things like that. But this thing exists, and I think it's realistic to say out loud that there's a good chance that students and staff are going to contract this virus. And that's with taking every single precaution. And I don't think that should be looked upon as a failure when that does happen. And I don't think we should really, you know, look to place blame and say, well, he should have worn a mask. As long as we're all working together, and we're all doing our part, we will get through this. But I think, you know, trying to say that there's going to be a, you know, no chance if we do all this that someone's going to get it, I think is unrealistic.
Appreciate that, Sam. Thank you.
I want to chime in real quick. I know as the men's soccer coach, I've already sent a memo to all my players as well as their parents, and they're having to agree upon wearing their face mask when they're going to classes, walking through the dorms and such. So I'm going to have a strike policy. You know, if I catch my guys in class or roaming the hallways of the dorms without wearing their mask, then that's going to go against them and get in playing time. Cause I mean, I can't, you know, get the virus as a coach. If that happens, then, you know, who's going to coach the team when we don't have an assistant coach? Obviously, if a professor gets it, they're going to have to go online most likely. So that's something I'm doing. I'm having my guys quarantine for 2 weeks prior to coming to preseason as well. If they do have to go and work, they're required to wear a face mask and gloves. So those are just different things that I'm putting in place. When they arrive on campus to move in, parents, siblings, you know, they're going to be wearing masks as well. I'll be wearing a mask when I go to, you know, meet them. There won't be any, you know, physical interaction, shake hands or anything like that. I know when we're traveling on games, we're not going to be stopping, you know, at gas stations or to get food. You know, we'll be bringing food on the bus prior. So I'm going to have coolers. You know, we're going to have peanut butter sandwiches, stuff like that. Probably do a lot of our meals inside the hotel. This is stuff that I've sent to Curtis as well. Just trying to make, you know, give as much support to these players as well as anyone around us. But, you know, if my guys are not wearing their mask, I'll be held accountable for that. But I'm going to make sure that whenever they see me that I'm demonstrating, you know, it appropriately. So we'll be required to do that throughout school.
Thank you, Scott.
This is Irina. I think it's very important to understand that if I am teaching a class and I have 10 students in my classroom and all of a sudden one of the students happens to be positive, that means that the whole class, including me and all the students, are going to be isolated for 2 weeks. If I had a meeting or any type of conversation with our faculty, when this positive test was discovered, that means that other faculties are having to be in isolation for 2 weeks as well. So it's very important to understand that, first of all, the whole scenario is very important to understand how important it is to have masks, to protect themselves, you know, and people around you. And it's also important to realize that we do need to be prepared to have classes online, because it's quite possible that it's not your fault, it's not somebody else's fault, but that just because you were in contact with somebody, that means that certain parts of your classroom, I mean, of your lectures, are supposed to be given online.
Thank you, Irina.
Thanks, Irina. Karen, you're still with us. I realize we're a little bit over, but I think this has been really good. And to a couple of things, let us clarify, and this is something that would be communicated with Brandon. So all of the buildings that are currently, you know, 90% of our buildings are locked up, or a high percentage of them. So we want to make sure that those buildings that are open, we start there, and that those access points contain a box of masks. The other thing, that the big takeaway here is all of us are hearing the need to hold one another accountable. And what I want to make sure we're able to do, and this is all in our language, and I encourage everybody to go to the language that guides us currently. We need all to internalize that language, the open safe plan for fall 2020. We all need to do our best to internalize that language so we all know what the guidance is. And it also means that we can engage it together and say, you know, is this the best we can do in terms of our guiding language? But I think this whole point about holding one another accountable, our guiding language also talks about stigmatization. And so we want to make sure that we have those ideas in our head about how do we hold one another accountable for our learning community, and how do we ensure that that we do that in a way that does not stigmatize. So it's a challenging time. There's just no doubt about it. And the only way that we have a fighting chance in all of this is to move forward with a shared commitment. That's what it takes. It's going to take every single one of us to do the very best we can. So I'm encouraged by these conversations. Karen, thank you.
One more question. There's a question in the chat about ordering a mask for everyone. I know that Aaron is on the call. Aaron, can you speak to the kits?
Maybe I can throw that in there. In purchasing, we've pulled together pretty large right now. The value stands at about $50,000 worth of safe opening supplies, personal protection equipment, including face shields, disposable masks, cleaning, virucidal cleaning agents, hand sanitizers, dividers for wherever necessary, the plexiglass dividers. You've probably seen some retail establishments. The plan right now is that at all of the entrances to all of our buildings where people come and go, we will have the disposable supplies and the hand sanitizer stations, et cetera, all ready to go. All the bathrooms will be equipped. In fact, every bathroom on campus will be equipped with touch-free or hands-free faucets. Every bathroom will be, including in the dormitory rooms, will be equipped with hands-free soap dispensers. So we're slowly working our way through all of equipping the campus for that.
Thanks, Karen.
Thank you.
Are we going to put signs up on all the external doors that, you know, say something about having to wear a mask and stuff? Because I think that would help, too.
Yeah, we can do that. We have that at the Joodla. They're required to have a mask to get in because Kangas is open, and they required it as well. So, Olivia, we can have maybe Brad whip out some signs.
Yeah, Brad's, I know it's on his to-do list to get a lot of very clear signage reminding people about social distancing and masks and all the other things that come along with this hand washing.
April has added in the chat that there'll be logo masks and neck gaiters available for purchase at the beginning of August. Thank you, April, for letting us know that. So a neck gaiter, I've always called it a buff. It's not a buff.
Depends on what city you're from.
It's a little bit thinner than a buff because I think those are usually fleece, so it's a little bit easier to breathe.
Well, I have no idea what I'm talking about, but I know my voice. So
it might be like a hat where you call a hat a chook or just a different terminology.
Right. Well, I like it. Okay. Just tells you how uninformed I am about such things. Karen, anything else?
No, this has been a great, engaged summer conversation Zoom. Thank you all very much. We'll see you next week.
Next Thursday, 1 o'clock. Thanks, everybody. Be well. Take care. Wear your mask.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.